Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to multifamily industry operations. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with two special guests who are extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today we're discussing something that is extremely important and very timely to the multifamily industry. Our topic is Radco Residential's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Journey. I have joining me two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Mike Brewer, Chief Operating Officer of the Radco Companies, and Janet Baildon, the Director of Human Resources and Business Partner with the Radco Companies. Welcome, everybody.
Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
So, very interesting topic, and it is timely right now in lieu of what's going on in across the country and in the world. So, Mike, I'm going to just ask you, what is the approach to diversity, equity, inclusion at Radco? We're going to get into the details of it in the ensuing segments, but let's just kind of do a quick overview.
Yeah, definitely. And I would start by saying thank you for having us today. And the other thing I'd start with is that diversity and inclusion is something that has always been important to us in our organization, but I think when the death of George Floyd happened, it certainly sparked us in an effort to really bring that to a more pronounced position in our company. And just by way of a short story, right on the heels of George Floyd's death, we were participating in a daily huddle, and one of our team members broke down and became very emotional talking about her son and his wanting to and willingness to participate in some of the protests that were happening as a result of that death. And it really hit me in the heart, so much so that I went to our CEO, Norman, and just pleaded, because he was already ready to do this, but said, look, this is the time that we need to embrace this as a company, and we need to be really intentional about how we approach it. And he wrote a very thoughtful email that we sent out to our company as a whole. And maybe I can let Janet fill in some of the details from that point.
Yeah, and to kind of go back to Mike's point, because I think, Mike, it is worth mentioning as well how you approached that particular team member to ask the question, you know, of what can we do? You know, what can we do to help? How can we lean in? And I think that team member was very forthcoming and kind of sharing her story, but also saying, you know, it would be really helpful and meaningful if we did something, right, other than just, say, a communication, but that we became part of having the conversation and taking action as well. So to Mike's point, when the CEO sent out that communication, we felt pretty strongly that, you know, we couldn't just put words on paper, that we really needed to follow through with some form of action. And so we did. The communication was beautifully written from the heart, but in that email, there was a call to action to form a social justice committee. So we sent that out, and we were really pleased with the results. We had a handful of team members who raised their hand and volunteered to be part of this conversation. And what was great about it is that it was a very diverse group. I mean, not just in terms of race, but also all levels of the company. So it was really great to have, you know, from on-site team members to corporate in one room talking about this really sensitive topic, but in a very real way. And so we did. We started meeting weekly, just having the dialogue. And, you know, I mean, Mike, it was definitely this pivotal moment for us of realizing that this was very real. And I think for us, that was really the moment that opened the door to kind of approaching this differently. To your point, Paul, our approach to diversity, equity, and inclusion, I would say, is kind of the opposite of, you know, your traditional HR initiative. For us, it's it became less about boxes to check, and it became more about the conversation and people, and really connecting in that way. And I think that's really how it kind of came to fruition, that this was more than just DEI in the traditional sense of the word.
You know, I think that's so important. I know in talking to different companies, not only in the multifamily industry, but other, you know, companies in other industries, that they do have HR initiatives, and you know, basically it's checking the box, and we took care of that, and it's a program that's available, but it doesn't really, you know, gain any momentum or traction. Tell us a little bit about, Mike, when you formed the committee, how was the sharing from the different members? Did it take a while for them to open up, or was it something that just happened immediately?
Yeah, that is a great question. I would tell you, I mean, it might be otherwise obvious that because of the sensitivity of the subject that people were not necessarily there with an open kimono to share, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were maybe didn't even know how to have a conversation or how to approach a conversation like that. And I think knowing that, we went in with a real intention to be 100% vulnerable, 100% open in trying to create a psychologically safe space for people just to share without fear, because that's basically the driver of all of that, right? There was a lot of fear around this conversation or that conversation. So we were really intentional about setting the stage for it, making sure that people had the opportunity to share in a way that didn't make them feel uncomfortable. So that the real example of that is that we simply went around the room and told our story, our individual stories about racism and about those things that impacted us. And it didn't matter our color, right? We had a mix of people on the phone, but all of those stories were incredibly powerful. In the sense that each one kind of helped the next person open up and become more vulnerable. Would that be a good description, Janet?
Yeah, except it was uncomfortable, right, Mike? I mean, it was, and I think that's what made it very real. You know, we
that's right.
To your point, I think it was creating the safe space. But, yeah, I think for the first few weeks, it was this, you know, what can I say? What can I not say? And, you know, for our team members that were also feeling such heightened emotions, you know, you could see in the beginning kind of holding back the emotion. And then it got to a point where we felt comfortable enough where let it out and that's okay. And I'm here to listen. But, you know, then to kind of take it a step further, around that same time that we were meeting weekly with the committee, we started meeting with consultants also, you know, trying to kind of, to your point, Paul, trying to get people to come in and help us in how do we approach diversity, equity, and inclusion as a company, right? And I think what we kept finding is they just, you know, it was all about the policies and the procedures. They wanted us to put on a kind of a town hall conversation, but for us, it didn't feel right to have, you know, Mike or our CEO, Norman, kind of speak to the audience about our stance as a company on the topic of racism. It for us, I think we realized there was something beautiful, right, that brought us together in conversation. And I think that for us, that was really the pivotal moment that kind of stemmed to the next phase of our journey, which was really opening up the conversation to the entire company and not just within the committee itself.
You know, and you're exactly right. It's not only uncomfortable, but it's an awkward conversation to have, but it's a necessary conversation to have. We've got about a minute left. And Mike, just what was probably the most impactful thing just from the committee that hit you that you can share with our audience?
Yeah, I guess the way I'd answer that question is just the, you know, I'll speak for myself. I up to this moment in time when we formed this, I didn't really sit around thinking about the impacts of this in our broader society or even more specifically inside of our organization. And so when people started telling their very specific stories as it relates to this topic, I just, you know, jaw dropping and just sitting back in my chair in utter disbelief that that stuff really happened in our world. It, I think innately I know it happens, but when it comes by way of the mouth of somebody that actually spends time with you trying to create something out in the world like multifamily housing, it was much more full of impact and really drove my emotions up, you know, borderline anger in the fact that those things happen out in the world, and then which drove the idea that we needed to take some real action and needed to be really intentional about what we did next.
All right. Well, we're going to break it here. I hope everybody listening will come back and listen to the rest of these seconds, because you're going to get a good lesson on exactly what to do within your companies if you haven't done something already about diversity, inclusion, and equity. We're going to be back after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing company, consistently excellent.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property. That's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we're back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters. And today we're discussing something that is especially important and very timely to the multifamily industry. Our topic is Radco Residential's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Journey. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me today are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Mike Brewer, the Chief Operating Officer of the Radco Companies, and Janet Baildon, the Director of Human Resources and Business Partner with the Radco Companies. Before we jump back into the conversation, I do want to remind our listeners, if you'd like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. So, again, to our listeners of this episode, stay tuned. There's some very valuable lessons, things that you can adopt into your company if you haven't done so already. But Mike, we talked a little bit in the last segment about how you started out with one conversation with someone that formed into a committee, a social justice committee within the company from people, very diverse group. You actually met with consultants, and you started having open conversations with the entire company. Let's talk about those sessions. Tell us a little bit about those. Describe them.
Yeah, so after the first part of that journey and kind of coming to the conclusion that and I don't mean this as an arrogant statement as an organization or certainly as an individual, but we thought we could do something on our own that would be just as meaningful or just as full of impact as having an outside consultant help us navigate our way through it. So we decided that we would just form a listening session, which at the time, you know, COVID had happened, so we formed that over Zoom. We sent the invitation out to the entire organization. We didn't mandate the meeting, but rather provided it as an option to team members to join in. and with the intention that we were just going to have open dialogue. So, you know, on the day of the call, we set the rules of engagement that this is a safe space. We're not here really to debate anything, but rather just to share personal stories as it related to the topic at hand. And I think by doing so, by setting it up that way, we really allowed for an opportunity for our team members to open up. And I think it started slow, but I think it gained momentum as we went through that first session and subsequently into the second, third, and fourth sessions.
Yeah, Janet, what were your feelings about it?
Yeah, to Mike's point, the first session definitely felt kind of like an awkward first date, right? There was this, this awkwardness to it. Mike, I think it was you who came up with the idea. So when we got into the first large virtual room and, Mike had his welcoming messages, we broke out into four small groups. And we started the dialogue with the simple question of, what compelled you to be here? Why are you here? And I do think that helped to kind of get people talking. And there was definitely, to Mike's point, a little bit of hesitation at first. But as some of the team members started speaking very openly about their stories, some very brave people, right, who came forward with their personal stories, it allowed the space to really ask questions about something that we're not used to asking questions about. And it was this moment when we realized this is not just something happening in the news, and this isn't just something that we're reading about or we're seeing on social media. This is something that's happening in the home of my peer, my coworker, my friend, a person I respect highly, and having to kind of hear how they have to almost coach their child, on how to present themselves in the world differently because of the color of their skin, or, be careful of who you associate yourself with, right? Because this could be you. And it was just, as a mother, to hear these stories from my peers who are also, say, a mother or a father or a brother or a sister, to hear how they have to approach life differently, I think for me, that was the moment where I said, this isn't okay, and we need to do something about that. So I really do think that it was that space that we allowed for that type of conversation that made it very real and made it less about all the noise that was going on in the world with, call it the protests. Don't forget, the heightened sense of the political, election year, so much going on. And in those listening sessions, all that went away and it just became about the people. And I do think that it was incredibly impactful for the people that were in that room.
Mike, tell us a little bit about the, you said that it kind of picked up steam. When you sent the invitation out for anybody within the company to join, how many attendees did you have in your original one? And then how did it progress to what size group did you have as you completed the project?
Yeah, definitely. I may let Janet speak to the absolute stats. I know the very first session, 40 people showed up to the call. And I think that 40 people, it was a very diverse mix of people. And I know this doesn't speak directly to your question, but I think it's an important point to make before I forget it. I think it was important that leaders moved first, or the people who had powerful stories went first, because that sort of provided an example of how it was really a safe space for people to speak into. For myself, I grew up in a home that was very racist, and a stepfather who was very racist. And so making the acknowledgement that there was a learned behavior, right, in terms of racism, I think was a powerful jumping off point for people to go, oh, okay, well, there's an acknowledgement there that is a real thing in this world. And because somebody is willing to step up and say that, then I feel comfortable in following that path, right, in opening up myself. So maybe, Janet, if you want to speak to the absolute stats, you could do that?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, Mike, there was about 40 people in the first session. We saw a little bit, and just kind of back up, after that first session, we did send out a survey to the people that attended and asked them, you know, to provide us with feedback on whether it was helpful for them and if they gained, it helped them to gain perspective. And then we asked the question, would you like another listening session? And it was across the board, everyone said yes. We hosted a second session. We saw a little bit of a drop in attendance. By the third session, we decided to change the conversation a little bit and add more structure around it. We also did a little more coaching in terms of the individuals who led those rooms, those breakout sessions, just to kind of change and shift a little bit of the dialogue to keep it flowing. But with that third session, we decided to send resources out ahead of time on the topic of racial profiling and unconscious bias. So we sent out a handful of, you know, links and articles and, you know, even unconscious bias tests, things of that nature, with the intention of, okay, now we have like two topics out here. Why don't we start with this? And I think a lot of people kind of gravitated towards that because then it provided something, right, some substance there. And so we did find that the conversation got deeper in that third session because of those resources and because of that structure. So it was really engaging. But, you know, at the end of that third session is where we really shifted because we had to make the decision. Do we continue with conversation or is this the moment when we shift to action? And we all decided and agreed that that was around the time that we had to make a little bit of a shift. So in that third session at the end of it, we allowed maybe 15 minutes to just brainstorm action items, throw it out, nothing, you know, no wrong answer, and let's see what sticks. And that was really kind of the moment when we started seeing, okay, now that we've all acknowledged that this thing exists out in the world, what can we do about it? And how do we become part of change? And so from those action items, we decided to form subcommittees. And that kind of led to, you know, the next stage, I guess, in our journey of, you know, shifting from conversation to real action.
Yeah, and Mike, we've got 30 seconds left. I just want to have you tell the difference to our listeners. You know, multifamily has a reputation, or in the past has had a reputation for discrimination, not necessarily within the companies, but as far as fair housing. That's what brought fair housing into being. How is this different? And we've got about 30 seconds.
I think I'm going to answer that question this way, and hopefully it speaks to it. I think organizations in this country are really designed to serve people that serve it. And the way that this is different is that we have been intentional about serving a thing that is real in the world. Whereas when you're not close to it, or you're not thinking about it, or you disappear into your home at night and you never give it a second thought, it just doesn't get the solutions don't come to be, right? The difference is we are taking real action and diving into something that I have acknowledged and we're very passionate about. Just being very intentional about it.
All right, well, we're going to leave it there. We're going to be back after this short break. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegiant has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegiant's access control product offerings, please visit usallegiant.com/MFM.
Well, we're back, and you're listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing something that is especially important and very timely to the multifamily industry. And our topic is Radco Residential's diversity, equity, and inclusion journey. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Mike Brewer, Chief Operating Officer of the Radco Companies, and Janet Baildon, the Director of Human Resources and Business Partner with the Radco Companies. And I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. Econserve, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. PM Workforce, the leasing management company, consistently excellent. Allegiant, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties, and CTS, Complete Technology Solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. So we've got to the point of where in this journey that you guys put in at Radco, we've gotten to the point in the discussion where you ended your listening section, created some action items, and you formed some social justice subcommittees within the company. So the question now is, out of all that effort, what have you seen that's changed? And Mike, I'll start with you.
I think the biggest thing that has changed is that we have made it okay to have conversations around emotionally loaded topics, such as race. And we did so by assisting people in the effort of understanding how to have those conversations, how to be respectful of different positions and different thought processes as it relates to that, and really seeking first to understand others' views and then to be understood by others. So I think the biggest thing that's changed is that we've made it okay. By way of a story, I've heard many times in our social justice committee meetings that the conversations that we have on the phone during that meeting have carried on throughout the day, be it with residents or other team members or even business partners that come in to serve our multifamily site team members. And to me, that's the biggest thing. It's just opened up the opportunity to allow people to have those conversations.
And Janet, what have you seen that's changed? Being in charge of human resources, that's a major major part of this. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was very nervous at first. It's basic HR 101, right? You don't talk about these things at work. Mm-hmm. There's definitely some fear around that, especially initially. And I think that's probably the reason why a lot of people don't do this, right? They don't start the conversation is out of fear of what may happen. It's so taboo, and not just in the workplace. But I'd agree with Mike 100%. The conversations continued, from even with friends, family, at home, with my children. I do see things differently, and even as simple as if you have sometimes we just have questions and we are afraid to ask them, and because we don't understand or because we don't know, and this has really allowed space for it to be okay to ask those questions and to be open and very real, to be honest, just real with one another. Mm-hmm. And there's less of this awkwardness in the room when something happens in the world where it's not okay for us just to pretend when we come to work that it didn't happen over the weekend or that it didn't, with recent events that nothing's going on. I think this has really allowed us to acknowledge it openly, check in with one another, on a personal level and to have that conversation.
What if you formed the subcommittees? What kind of things did they do, and how has it been worked throughout RADCO? Mike, you want to take that?
Yeah, we ended up creating four subcommittees by title. The first one was Celebrating Diversity. That was by way of sending out communications and emails that celebrated different cultures and religions, etc. The second was recruiting and working with some of the HBCUs or historical black college universities, colleges and universities, and in the areas of unconscious bias training, revisiting our own job descriptions, and partnering with universities so that we could do recruitment, but do it in a way that was inviting and inclusive. And then the third one, supporting minority-owned businesses, that was really creating a platform to highlight and support local minority-owned businesses by way of our platform. And then the fourth one was community outreach, and that really is creating partnerships with nonprofits so that we can give time, money, and resource to those organizations in this area.
Now, when you say locally local minority-owned businesses, are you speaking in terms of local to where your assets are located or local to your corporate office?
Yeah, so I think it's even more local than that. The way it has started, anyway, we have team members who actually own businesses on the side, whether it be through a spouse and or directly as a, you know, to use the term side hustle, but something they do outside of the RADCO hours of operation. And so we've started there in supporting those businesses. One of our team members, her husband has a hair cutting place, a barbershop. So doing things as specific as going out and creating videos and packaging those things up to share out to social media. Another one of our team members has a cleaning company that we are attempting to do the same thing with. So it's local to our company specifically right now, but our intent is to go a little more local as it relates to where we do operations out in the various cities.
And I guess the one question is, I know that you've got the four subcommittees that are concentrating on these different areas. Have you had an opportunity now, after going through this process, to communicate with the entire company beyond those subcommittee members to let them know what's going on, or is that something that's a constant thing that you're doing? Janet, if you want to
speak to that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so to answer your question, we have not been as, I think for us that was kind of this moment where we realized, oh, we've been in the work, and we've been meeting biweekly with our subcommittees for now 6-7 months. And it's been a while since we've communicated the progress company-wide. We haven't really done a great job of doing that, other than, to Mike's point, the celebrating diversity communications that go out once or twice a month, sometimes three times a month, depending on the time. And those are branded, I guess, if you will, as part of our social justice subcommittee work. So, you know, there's been, I'd say, communications that go out as we might roll something out as an initiative, but we haven't been as consistent as we should be in terms of frequent communication to showcase some of the progress we've made and invite team members to continue to join, because initially we invited team members to be part of these subcommittees when we first formed it. But, you know, again, that was in the fall of last year. So there might be a handful of team members who would now like to join. And so that's something we just started talking about in the past month in our committee, is really, we need to keep this conversation going, and is now a good time to solicit that. And what's the frequency of the communication, and what does it look like so that team members know that this didn't end, right, with the listening sessions, or that, you know, that we're actually making progress So it's a great question, Paul, because it's something that we had just talked about just a few weeks ago.
Well, and Mike, we've got about 45 seconds left. I want to ask you this question because you launched this whole effort of doing this and right in the midst of a pandemic, which we're still in somewhat. Obviously, you did a lot of things virtually. Had the pandemic not been there, would you have done it any differently as far as the way you created the committees and got the participation, or would you have still done it as virtually as you did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I had a huge smile on my face. And
yeah, me too. And then Mike.
Yeah, it's we definitely would have done it differently, and the difference would have been we would have done all of this in person. For all the great use of Zoom or even Microsoft Teams, I think there is an energy that exists when you get people together in a room that, in my heart of hearts, makes me believe that we would have potentially been of more impact, right? We could have done some things that would have been born out of the energy that you get when you're in a room with other people that could have been more fruitful, who knows? But, yeah, that we definitely would have done it in person versus doing it virtually like we did.
All right. Well, we're going to end it here. We are going to be back with our final segment of this episode right after this short break. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
COVID-19 has greatly impacted the multifamily industry, emphasizing the need to reduce costs and increase revenue right now. PM Workforce can help you by providing intensely trained, performance-ready, certified leasing professionals. On-demand labor gives you more control over staffing costs. Their proprietary technology allows you to solve staffing problems within 60 minutes, 24/7, 365. Go to PMWorkforce.com before making a long-term hiring decision. Try one of their leasing professionals today. PM Workforce, the leasing company, consistently excellent.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing something that is very important and timely to the multifamily industry. Our topic today is Radco Residential's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Journey. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Mike Brewer, Chief Operating Officer of the Radco Companies, and Janet Baildon, the Director of Human Resources and Business Partner with the Radco Companies. Janet, I want to start with you because we've talked in the first three segments about how everything progressed starting mid-year last year after the death of George Floyd with this journey that the company went on. But, your intense participation in it, being the Director of Human Resources and so forth, how did it personally impact you? What is your takeaway from it?
Yeah, that's a great question. As I mentioned earlier, I have two children at home, and I'd say personally for me, it's really got me to a point to have be open and courageous in my conversations, right? Just not just with my children, but also with friends and family. Just to stop tiptoeing around the topic and really getting down to the meat and asking those really critical questions, and also being very aware of my own lens of the world, right? And being vulnerable enough that I can say I'm human, right? And I have my own history and past and upbringing, and all of that leads to the person I am today, and that person's not perfect. And so I think the conversations have really led me to see the world a little differently, and being courageous enough to say this is, you know, that some things need to change, and to really listen and be part of that. I'd say also professionally for me, from coming from an HR background, again, this is so taboo, and everything in my textbook and educational background and professional background told me not to do this, right? But there comes a point also in your career where you just have to make the decisions that feel right. And it might not be textbook business. It just feels right. And so I appreciate Mike also for being bold enough and encouraging us as leaders to really take that step, because I think that was really important for me personally and professionally.
And Mike, what about what impact did you personally?
I think personally, having what I put away as distant memories resurrected and sort of brought right in front of my face, as it relates to what was going on in the world, was it really hit me hard. And I would tell you that I had probably an emotional hangover for the better part of a month on the heels of the conversation with our team member, mostly in part due to her emotion, but then also the emotion that I experienced in terms of remembering all these things that had happened in my childhood home. And so the way that it translated into the real world, to speak to Janet's point about being bold, I think those two things in combination caused that to happen, in that I saw sort of this unfairness that was happening in the world, but more close to home, based on personal experience, based on the experience of our team member. And there was like no other choice, right? So it impacted me in a way to take a step that, to Janet's point, you shouldn't, or at least up to that point in time, you shouldn't take as an organization. But that's the way it impacted me in the biggest way, was just, it was the catalyst that pushed me over the edge of, okay, we're doing this and we're just going to figure it out as we go along.
Well, I mean, that's a great example of how something like this can personally impact somebody. I want you to share with our listeners some of the lessons learned from the process that you went through, so that if they wanted to do this, maybe they can learn from what you've already have done. Mike, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that the biggest lesson learned for me, and this is to preface that in short, I'm a huge believer that everything that happens in the world is a great big education, and it is an opportunity for us to grow as individuals and as leaders. And so I went into this with the mindset that that me and Janet and others who were in senior positions in this organization were not going to be the leaders in this context. And so we put the leadership responsibilities on others in the room who were leasing consultants or assistant managers on the site level, and without giving them the resources to actually do that sort of thing. We gave them some loose resources, some loose ideas, and some loose understanding of what leadership looks like in a room, but not real tight restrictions as it relates to that, or tight education, so to speak. And I think that ended up causing us to get off track many times, because if you've not done the reps in way of becoming a leader, then you just don't know what to do. You don't know what you don't know, so you don't do it. So that's one of the biggest lessons, just making sure that we define those things ahead of time. If you're going to ask somebody to be a leader, you need to give them the resources to lead well.
And what about, you already mentioned you haven't had a chance yet to communicate company-wide. What about continuing the conversation?
We actually just talked about this a few weeks ago, as I mentioned. And yes, we are giving it very serious thought of hosting another listening session. We talked a little bit about how to structure that a little differently, and you know, even to the point of, do we call it a listening session or what do we call it? There was actually a team member that sits in the committee that said, I want to shake things up. I want people who don't agree with my perspective to show up in the room. I want to have a real conversation. And I just thought that was brave, she said, you know, I appreciate the listening and I appreciate the conversation, but I want to speak to the people who don't agree with our perspective and I want to understand them. I want to understand why and I want to understand where they're coming from. So I think for us, it's just trying to figure out now what that looks like, the kind of future, you know, the next version of the listening session. And also, you know, kind of going back to lessons learned, when Mike had mentioned about building future leaders, we also, because this wasn't a textbook approach, we didn't have boxes to check, which is great. It allowed us to be very authentic and flexible. But at the same time, I think that there was a little bit less structure, right? We didn't set goals. We didn't start with the end in mind. So I do think there comes a point where you do need to define some goals and so that you can feel like there's this progress being made and there's alignment, right, in what we're trying to accomplish. But I appreciate you asking the question, Paul, about continuing the conversation because we've, you know, this is a marathon, right? We have a long way to go. And I think it is important to continue the conversation, encouraging others to do the same and also not losing the perspective of why we're here and why we even started this journey.
Well, I want to transition into another topic, but before I do, I just want to make a personal comment, and that is, you know, Radco is to be commended for doing this. I mean, it's a very important thing to do at any time, but to do it in the midst of a pandemic when most companies are just figuring out how they keep their operations going, to tackle something like this, I think is you know, very admirable, and you guys you know, are a great example for other companies in our industry out there. So congratulations on that. And Let me transition. I always, at the end of our final segment, want to ask, our listeners, I'm sure, are familiar. Most of them are familiar with Radco. But tell us a little bit, Mike, about Radco, your footprint, and what's going on with Radco.
I now have another big smile on my face. So not only did all of this happen in the context of a pandemic, but it also happened in the context of downsizing our organization. We saw an opportunity out in the marketplace to bring many of our business plans to an end, meaning selling off the assets that had run our 3 to 5 year original business plan. And so I think at the time we started this journey, we were some 17 or 18,000 units plus minus. I'm probably a little bit off on the unit count, but now we're down to a couple of thousand units in 4 cities versus 9 cities, and so we were also trying to manage all of those dispositions in the process. So, to speak to your question, we are now pivoting not away from multifamily, but being a little more selective in our multifamily acquisitions, trying to upgrade the age of our portfolio. I try to get a little younger in terms of age of portfolio, looking at some of the Class A assets that are out in the various cities that we do business in currently or have done so in the past. We're also pivoting over into the hotel space. We know that the hospitality industry has been crushed, certainly by COVID. So we see some opportunities in that space to maybe go in and acquire and run hotels, not in-house, but rather under one of the 7 flags that that you may know as Hilton or Marriott, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. At the same time, continuing to try to acquire multifamily, just probably in a more limited way.
All right. And what are you looking for, Janet, as far as recruiting?
That's a great question. For us, we are in the process of kind of a large initiative of looking at our talent internally and identifying what it takes to kind of raise the bar, right, if you will. We have some amazing, amazing team members at RADCO. And to Mike's point, now that we've downsized, it gives us this opportunity to kind of preserve that culture going forward, and really ensuring that we're recruiting the best of the best. And so as we continue to grow again, for us, we're going to be much more selective in our recruiting process. And for us, really seeing that as this, you know, opportunity to kind of change the way that we do things, and also pivot from, you know, being less tactical in our approach and really bringing the human aspect back into the business, right? The customer service aspect and putting a team member first and servicing, you know, our residents in the best way possible.
Well,
if I could add to that, Paul, really quickly, just to sort of piggyback on what Janet was saying in the area of recruiting talent, we are also building out a third-party property management platform based on the history of RADCO and the 80 plus or minus assets that we've managed over the last seven or eight years, meaning the time we've owned them. We've been in the property management business for about 5 years, but we have, because we have executed so well and with such excellence on those assets all the way through to a disposition, we believe that we have a platform that we can put out into the market for third-party property manager or third-party clients, rather. And to speak to Janet's point about recruiting talent, we want to make sure that we're very thoughtful and intentional about recruiting that talent, because we want to be able to carry on the excellence that we've provided to our in-house owner, and we want to make sure that we're doing that at a high level with third-party clients on a go-forward.
All right. Well, we could talk about this topic for a long time. We do need to break it here. I will put on our episode page of the website, multifamilyradio.com, a link to your website at RADCO. So if anybody would like to get in touch with you guys, they're welcome to do it that way. But we're going to be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.